Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and you'll want to cozy up and just really enjoy yourself because we have a very unique interview today. We are talking with our guest, Dr. Bob Curran. He is in Northern Ireland, and this man is a researcher and a historian, and we're going to be talking about a subject that gives a lot of people the willies. What is it? It's werewolves. Ooh, this is so wonderful to be able to discuss. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, last year we talked about vampires. This year you have this brand new book on werewolves, and this, you say, is a field guide to shapeshifters, lycanthropes, and man-beasts. Oh, that sounds so ominous. And I'll have to tell you something. I have to compliment you on the artistry in here because your book is magnificently illustrated, and Ian Daniels is the one that's done all this wonderful work.
Ian Daniels is a terrific. We have worked together, I think, on about 6 or 7 books together, and his artwork gets better and better all the time. He sent me down the cover for this and said, what do you think of that? Because he sends me down the stuff and said, you know, what do you think of this?
Mm-hmm.
And the cover is a bit scary, Donna, with the man beast and the woman and this book of spells and the full moon and everything. It's all there.
Yes, he managed to encapsulate it quite nicely. Now,
yeah.
I want people to know that, obviously, you're a writer, but you also are a broadcaster in Northern Ireland, and as well as a cultural and educational advisor for a lot of different organizations within the government, and you've written about all kinds of things and have appeared on a number of shows, including mine here in the United States. But let's go into a little bit of this history, because the concept of the werewolf is something that has evolved. And that's what I love about your research. You actually go from where we are now and take your time machine and you go backwards. And that's what we're going to be doing. And there is a wonderful introduction, which you call A Walk on the Wild Side, and it reads like this. Somewhere among the shadows which throng the deepest recesses of the human mind, a ferocious beast is crouching. Something extremely ancient and primal, a relic of mankind's original history, a fragment of his initial bestial nature. And although the eons have left a veneer of civilization and culture on us, the beast still waits deep within every one of us, ready to emerge. Gee, that sounds like something for 2012.
I think so, Donna. You're starting to scare me, and I wrote it.
Oh, I just love this. Anyway, let's go in to the fact that horror films, horror stories, my goodness, that's a lucrative business.
It is indeed. And I think that in February 2010, you're going to get a Wolfman, which is coming out as a film, which is a very modern uptake on the werewolf story. So the book is perhaps quite timely. But, Donna, as you are quite rightly saying, the roots of the werewolf go back to our earliest ancestors, because I think, anyway, this may still be deep within us, as you're reading out, I think, anyway, that this comes from the earliest times when our ancestors, the hominid ancestors of mankind, were hunters and competed with the wolf for prey, particularly when the weather was bad and the game was very scarce. The wolf, of course, is a wonderful hunting and killing machine. It is fast, it is strong, it is incredibly intelligent, and it is skillful in trapping its prey. And perhaps our early ancestors looked at the wolf and said, my goodness, I wish I could be like that. And then they began to think, maybe if I put on a wolf's skin or a wolf's pelt or something like that, then I would become like the wolf. And it was a small step then from to introduce a sort of supernatural element in which they said, well, maybe I can be more than like the wolf. The wolf's spirit and all its skills can inhabit my body. And we know this, perhaps, because one of the earliest drawings that we have of what might be a werewolf or a shaman dressed as a wolf appears in a cave drawing in France. It's from the Paleolithic times, and it is the sorcerer of Trois Frères and in the Pyrenees, in a cave deep in the Pyrenees. And this shows a sort of half man, half wolf or animal figure raised on its hind legs, and it combines all the elements of a man and an animal. So that is probably the origin. And that hunting imperative, which we were talking about, and the beast crouching within us, is probably a remnant of that early sort of hunting element. Because I think we do, for all our civilization and for all our alleged culture, we have not completely shaken off the very earliest imperatives and impulses which guided us in those times. And perhaps somewhere deep within us, the hunter or the hunting beast is still crouching.
Oh, I agree with that. Now, you bring out some interesting points regarding the term werewolf. And you say it's undoubtedly of Saxon or Germanic or Viking origin, which, you know, and you say it's deriving perhaps from the Old Norse varg, or maybe I'm not pronouncing it, it's V-A-R-G-R.
You're pronouncing it very well, Donna.
All right. And then the German Wager, or W-A-G-R.
Varger.
Varger. And you bring out a point about Norse law. Now, again, we're going centuries back, but Norse law, you said there was a form of compensation paid to an individual's family or community if someone murdered or did, you know, something that was just a terrible, terrible violation. What was that called?
That was called Vergelt. The Ver referred to a man. And believe it or not, there was a churchman actually called Bishop Werewolf.
Oh, gotta tell us about him. He's really interesting.
The term wolf was probably used to, as I say, demonstrate strength and intellect and great superiority. And so a number of churchmen actually took the name Wolf. For instance, we have in the 11th century in England, Archbishop Wolfstan. In fact, there were two of that name. And then you actually have, he may well have been half Viking, Archbishop Werewolf. Which combines the notion of the man and the beast, and literally means man-wolf, because we're looking at the old Viking, which gave us the name Werewolf, which means man-wolf, or the old Germanic as well. And it also gave us the word berserk. And we talk about going berserk, or the berserkers, mm-hmm. because the berserkers were closely related to the werewolves. Because they believed, they worshipped not the wolf, but the bear, which was another admired animal. And they believed that if you put on the bear skin, or the bear shirt, as it was, bar sark, it would give you power in battle. You know, it would make you as ferocious and as strong as the bear. So we get the word berserker from that. Now, berserker were highly valued warriors. In fact, groups of them fought at the end of the 9th century in Scandinavia mm-hmm. for a king, Harald Fairhair, who reigned at the end of the 9th and beginning of the 10th centuries in Norway. And he employed a number, they were mercenaries, and he employed a number of the Barsark. But the Varwolf was also a sign of great, even better, it was a sign of great strength and great intellect, because the wolf was considered to be incredibly wise. And in early medieval tales, you will find the notion of a man changing into a wolf is not necessarily an evil thing.
Right.
Sometimes a man in some of the early medieval poems is transformed into a wolf by the guiles, or I don't know if I can say this or not, by the guiles of a woman.
Oh!
who maybe has another lover or something like that, and she magically changes him into a wolf to get rid of him. And then in many of these old moral tales from the early medieval period, from around the 11th or 12th centuries, destroys the false lover and the false lady and reveals himself perhaps to the king or to some great lord or something like that. And everything ends in relative terms quite happily. But the wolf was actually a noble creature was a sign of great nobility, which it was, as we were talking about earlier, with the archbishops and the church. It was a sign of nobility, it was a sign of strength, it was a sign of great intellect. So the werewolf was not the ravening man-beast that you would think of, but it was a wise and considered figure in the early medieval period.
You bring out the information about Egypt. You have legends that you go into, the north of, you know, the Native American culture. And then you talk about a group of people that were called the dog-headed race. And this is just absolutely fascinating. How in the world, where did you find the records on the dog-headed people?
And there are old records in the British Museum. And you have only to go to Canterbury to look at a thing called the Mappa Mundi, the map of the world. In the medieval times, people were beginning to travel out across the world and into various lands. And we tend to think of medieval Europe as a very closed community. It was nothing of the sort. People were traveling all over the place. Not in the numbers that they probably are now, but there were travelers, certainly, who came back with tales which they of races that they haven't that they had heard of, or that they had encountered, or that they had seen maybe at a distance. Now, in order to explain themselves, they began to describe all sorts of weird people. Mm-hmm. They talked about men with ears as long, very long, so that they could actually use one as a blanket. We do know that there were very long-eared people about, maybe not as long as that, but we do know that on Easter Island, and you've only to look at the statues to see the length of their ears, mm-hmm. so they were quite long-eared. There was an idea that there were a race of dog-headed people living somewhere in the East. Now, when the dog-headed people spoke, they spoke in a sort of barking language, so the scribe said, and they used the words bar-bar, which was the way they spoke. And that became incorporated into the word barbarian. So that means that somebody who is outside the pale of civilization, who is a barbarian or something like that, were equated with these dog heads. Because later on during the times of the Crusades in the 11th, 12th, and 13th centuries, these dog heads were very useful. They became equated with the Saracens in the Middle East. And they said that these dog-headed men lived in places like Ethiopia in North Africa, into which the Crusaders were going, and that they were barbarians and that the Crusaders were bringing civilization and Christianity and things to them because they were totally uncivilized. Now, it was odd because whenever they traveled east, whenever travelers came east and met some of the people, they said, you know, out in the west where you come from, there are dog-headed people. And so each one, strangely enough, had their legends about dog-headed people living in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, the Christian Church took that over and said that the dog-headed people, there was a great debate as to whether the dog-headed people had souls or not. And it was thought that even a Christian saint may well have been a dog-head. The Christian saint involved was St. Christopher, who has always been a bit ambivalent with the Catholic Church. Sometimes St. Christopher, who is the patron saint of travelers, is venerated, and sometimes, as at the present time, doubts are cast on his actual existence. He was supposed to be a dog head called Reprobus, who had been captured and brought in among the Christians and converted to Christianity. And so the myth of the dog heads was very widespread and permeated all parts of society, both political and religious.
You know, it's fascinating when I was going through your book, and you've done such an outstanding job in being able to record the history and putting the various points of the world into the positioning, different groups that existed in Africa, in North America, and South America. And there is a culture about a culture within culture regarding animals that is very mm-hmm. significant. And mm-hmm. this is something that's very important, but you also bring in the fact that within the church structure, there was a manual produced by a pope that justified burning witches, and that was part of the witch hunts, and our history is replete with this horrific stuff that went on where people used belief systems and twisted and turned them so that they could use them against others. But one of the things that you said in your book is that one of the oldest written stories about werewolves comes from Ireland, and it was written about 1185 by a Welsh monk. What is it with these monks? Didn't they have anything else to do besides creating monsters, for heaven's sake?
Well, Giraldus Cambrensis, who wrote the first, if you like, the first travel book on Ireland. Giraldus arrived here in about 1185. He came with Prince John, who was one of the younger sons of Henry II, who was the King of England. And Henry had given him something to do. Henry had made him Lord of Ireland. So he came over to Ireland, and he brought with him his confessor, who was a Welsh monk called Geraldus Cambrensis, Gerald of Wales. Now, the thing about Gerald was, he was actually related to some of the Norman nobility who had established themselves in parts of Ireland, for example, in County Wicklow. Geraldus had the unfortunate ability to believe that everything that he was told. He began to set down old stories that he had heard, because much of the tradition which he had picked up was oral tradition, and he wrote them down as if they were fact and history. For instance, he wrote that all Irish women, and I hope none of your listeners are of Irish descent. I hope you're not of Irish descent, Donna.
Oh, I think somebody flew around
Irish
somewhere.
Yeah. Had the ability to change themselves into the guise of hares. And to suck from the udders of cattle in the morning, which is why the cattle came in dry. But he heard a story told to him by, I think, one of his cousins or one of his relatives, anyway, Morris Fitzgerald, about a monk who was traveling through an area which we which is on the borders of County Meath today, which was called Ossory. It was I think there's still a Bishop of Ossory even today. And he was on a mission to some monastery in Meath. And as he camped at night, a wolf approached him. Excuse me. And asked him, would he come with him, with the wolf? Because the wolf was one of a clan who had been cursed by another saint, a saint called Nechtan. And each year, every 7 years, the two of the clan were forced to take the guise of wolves and remain in that guise for 7 years. And then they came back and two other people. Now, this wolf was actually a man, and he and his wife had been changed, and his wife had been shot by a hunter, and she was dying. And the wolf asked the holy man to come and give her the final rites of the church, which the holy man actually did. And the wolf wished him well and made several prophecies about Ireland, and took him to the edge of the forest and allowed him to go on his way. And once again, as in all of these medieval tales, the wolf appears as a kind and a wise and a very moral animal, because the wolf was concerned that his wife would die within the church and not as a beast. So that is the oldest story. That is the oldest written story. It was the General Topography of Ireland by Geraldus Cambrensis. Was published in 1187 and remained in as the standard book until almost the 1600s, even in England.
Well, you have so many fascinating stories in here, and obviously we're not going to have time to do it, but we live in a time where vampires are becoming better looking, and they're much tidier, and werewolves have tailor-made suits. I mean, we really are going through an interesting period here. Why do you think that this is something that we continually perpetuate? Hollywood has just made billions on these characters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see regarding, you know, full moons and all of this? Where do you see this going? Because now they're turning out to be good guys. They're not all bad guys. In fact, there's good werewolves that fight the bad werewolves.
We are getting some of these over here as well. We're getting things like True Blood and stuff, which now appears on. But in answer to your question, Donna, I think these have survived because, and I'm speaking here sort of as a psychologist, because part of my degree is in psychology, because they look at very fundamental questions, which we feel we have to address. Now, up at the top of the interview, I said that part of the hunter element and part of the dark element, you know, the savage element, still remains in us, cloaked, it may be buried very, very deep, but I still think it's there. And it presents a sort of problem for us because we're both fascinated by it and repelled by it. Somewhere deep within, you read out at the very start where the dark beast was crouching somewhere in deep within us, and I think that is true. And part of us recognizes that beast, and part of us draws away from the beast. Part of us is intrigued by the beast because it actually is part of our makeup. I always remember a story which I read where the guy came to the magician and said, "Can you summon me a demon?" And the magician said, "I can summon you a demon more fearsome than any in Demonland simply by striking you across the face." Mm-hmm. And I think that is something within, deep within us. The vampire appeals to our notion about immortality and life after death, because death remains the last great mystery. We literally don't know what happens to us when we die. And so, and there also is a question which lies in the back of our minds: what would happen if we didn't die? What would happen if we could live forever? And that is a very fundamental question. Both the notion of the beast and both the notion of death and immortality are very fundamental to us. And so we project these either into the werewolf or into the vampire, and we're both fascinated and terrified by both, and we enjoy, and we're intrigued by both, and we're repelled by both. So we go and see them whenever we can, and as you say, the nearer we can make them to ourselves, the more enticing they become. I mean, I'm looking at the books, which I admit I've never read, but Twilight, the vampire books, are now a massive grossing. Apparently, the new books are now selling faster than any other book which has ever been written, and are outselling even Dan Brown. So there is an appetite for that, and I think the appetite lies within our own psyche, so that we begin to explore, we begin to investigate, and we are intrigued by all these issues: the beast within us, the notion of immortality, what would happen, what happens after death, can we continue on as some ancient cultures believed, and I think that is the root of the fascination which has kept the film industry and kept the television industry and kept publishers going for a couple of centuries.
Absolutely. Now, Bob, I know that we're out of time here. I need your website so that our people can go and check out your publications and find out about this latest one on werewolves. Your history is wonderful. The stories are amazing. And boy, does it wake you up to how things can get off on the wrong track and travel along for centuries before somebody even questions them, what you did. Give me your website, Bob.
At the moment, Donna, I am having a new website built, but what I can do, if people want to drop me a line or ask me, is give you an email.
Okay.
The email is drbobcurran, Dr. Bob Curran, at yahoo.co.uk.
At yahoo.co.uk.
And the new website will be up in the new year.
Wonderful.
It is literally, I am here, there, and everywhere, Donna, and I'm finding it very difficult to actually to sit down with the designer and work it through.
Well, Bob, this has been wonderful. My guest today has been Bob Curran. His fascinating book, believe me, it really is a good read, Werewolves, A Field Guide to Shapeshifters, Lycanthropes, and Man-Beasts. Ah, yes, and you'll notice that on the cover is a gorgeous girl. They always have them good-looking. There's never an ugly woman with any of these dudes that they come up with. The Werewolves. It is absolutely fascinating reading. Thank you so much, Bob, for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, you can do that, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. All I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, is your first name or your initial. After that, I will give you my mental impressions. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from as well. So, 888-815-9756. And don't forget, we're just a few days away from a wonderful festival, the Dickens Festival in the state of Washington, the Tacoma area, western Washington, of course. So for those of you listening from my area of the country, I'm going to be appearing this Saturday at the Dickens Festival at the King Bookstore. And it's downtown Tacoma. You can go to thedickensfestival.net. You can find out all the information about this wonderful event. I'm going to be doing many consultations there. There will be a fee for my time, but what's going to happen is part of that is going to be donated to a charity that the organizers of the festival have chosen this year, and the money, my money and some others are going to be going in towards benefiting that charity. So this is an event for the entire family. Last year we had snow. We won't have snow this year. We're going to have rain instead, but that's okay. It's going to be a lot of fun, and there's just so much going on. I will be at the King Bookstore from 11 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon, and of course, no appointment is necessary. So I hope you can stop by. Again, go check out the DickensFestival.net, and you'll get more of the details. So often we get all this paranoia, I call it, about people getting older. We're all supposed to fall apart when we get older and reach the age of our 80s or 90s. Boy, are things changing relative to that. You know, now people that are in their 50s and 60s are looking at their 70s, 80s, and 90s saying, what am I going to do? I better keep myself nice and active. Well, I came across information about a woman. She's been billed in the Guinness Book of Records as the oldest still performing showgirl in the world. She's 86 years young. I've got a photo of her in front of me. I'm astonished. You would never know that she's 86. What comes to your mind when you think of an 86-year-old? That they look like a prune, they're all shriveled up and they're doubled up and they can't see, they can't do anything. They're just in bad shape. This woman has lovely legs, beautiful complexion, and her story is that she began dancing when she was 3 years old, and Calvin Coolidge was president. That was a long time ago, 83 years ago or more. Now, she, as a Chicago teenager, she taught a young Bob Fosse how to tap dance. She won a tap contest and ended up rising to stardom at the age of 15 with her own act in the then Empire Room of Chicago's Palmer House. Now, she went on tour with the Eddie Duchin Orchestra and other notables of the big band era. Now, also, she worked with Canadian Canifloss, and she performed with Liberace, the Mills Brothers, Mel Torme, Frankie Lane, and Chico Marx. Now, when television came around, she was the first tap dancer ever to appear on television, and she had her own show in Chicago, which was her hometown, on WBKB. Now, she is in her 14th year of performing in the Palm Springs Follies, and it's a three-hour show. It's total razzle-dazzle, as they describe it. It's a song and dance vaudeville-style extravaganza, and they feature music from the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. She was quoted as saying, I never really thought much about age. She said, age doesn't come into it when I'm on stage. What an attitude. How would you like to still be dancing when you're 86? She's planning on doing it when she's well past 100, I'm sure. What a story and what a gal. I just had to share that with you. So if you have anybody in your family that's getting close to their 80s, you need to go get a copy of from the Guinness Book of Records about the oldest still performing showgirl in the world, and show it to them. And they go, yeah, a little hussy. Say, you should be like this person at 86. What an objective, huh? I just love it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-815-9756 is the toll-free number worldwide. Give me a buzz and we will chat. Now we're coming. We are in the Pacific Northwest, colder temperatures. And if you're a person and you're wanting to figure out ways to work with getting your environment warmer, sometimes we have office environments or there might be areas in our home, like if you have a basement or maybe there's a family room, it depends on the design, where you'd need heat and you don't want it there all the time. Well, maybe you're in a position to be wealthy enough where you can have a heating system put in every level of your home or have it set up so every room can have its own heating capacity. But for so many people, that's not the case, so they like to use portable heaters. Well, portable heaters are wonderful, but they are notorious for causing fires. and especially for people in mobile homes or in real small environments, and you need to be alert. You've got to have good ventilation, etc. Well, there have been developments through the years for heaters that make it much more comfortable for you, and I came across some information that I thought was worth sharing with you. You can, if you've already got an existing heating condition, of course, you can always upgrade, but it may be more costly than what you want to invest in at this time. So if you want to use a portable electric heater, that is something that is available to you. Now, you have to be concerned about safety. You really do. And you want to make sure that your heater is going to be energy efficient. Well, I came across some information, like I said, about four different types of heaters that are now available. One is a fan-forced heater, one is a ceramic heater, and one is a micathermic and convection heater, and the other one is a quartz and a radiant heater. Now, your fan-forced heaters, air is warmed over coils, and that's been around for a long time. There's all kinds of models that you can get. And now they have improved it where if you have, you know, children that are in your environment, that they have a cool touch plastic housing around it, so you're not going to have a concern about a youngster or a pet perhaps being affected. It gives slow, steady heat. It comes up very quickly. And you can, if you want it to direct the heat into a certain aspect of the room, you can do that. And it is better if your room is a little drafty and it's quiet. It's not super quiet, but it is quiet. And it's, again, like I said, very good with children and pets. Now, your ceramic heaters work a little differently. If your air is warmed as it passes over a large ceramic and aluminum heating element, and the heat is dispersed by a fan. And the fan is a pretty powerful one. And again, you're going to get your heat very quickly. And it has all kinds of good points. And then the micathermic, I've never heard of this one before. And this is where air passes over a large heating element circulating steady long-term heat throughout the room. Now, this one is ultra quiet. And it's gradual and also is very efficient with giving out heat. And then the last one is the quartz and the radiant. And they say glowing elements radiate heat directly forward for immediate personal warmth, but it's very targeted in how it's directed. So these are all very, very good types of units to have if you need something to keep you warm or if you're just wanting to heat a certain room. And that saves money. Instead of trying to heat the whole house sometimes, if you're just in one locale, and you want to just heat that particular area, you're going to be able to do that efficiently and well. So those are just some tips I wanted to share with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. When we come back, I have got a marvelous recipe for you. Chicken breast stuffed with sun-dried tomatoes and green olives. Wow, this is such an easy recipe, but it's deliciously flavorful. And as we get closer to the holidays, we're going to be sharing some wonderful recipes for the holiday season as well. So get your pad of paper and pen handy and come on back. And then if I have some time, I'm going to be sharing a story with you about a community that made a difference in the life of a young boy. We'll be coming back in just a moment. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, we do have interesting subjects on this show. We're going from werewolves to, tomorrow, conversations from your neighborhood ice cream shop. Nobody ever said that we had everything consistently on this show. Well, Denny Stockdale is going to be my guest. This is a wonderful man, and you are thoroughly going to enjoy him. I just love his book, and it's Down Home Country Wisdom, and it's just really, really a pleasure to be able to share his insights and perspectives with you. And then we're going to be talking about a very special dog on Friday. Maggie is her name. Dawn Cairns is the woman that had owned Maggie, and her story is one that I think will touch your heart and your mind. And then next week, we're going to be talking about seafood on Monday. The Diabetes Organization has a wonderful seafood cookbook. We're going to be talking with Barbara Brown on Monday. And then, one of your favorite topics in the whole world, what is that? Taxes. Bonnie Lee is going to be my guest. Taxpertise. We're going to figure out how to handle taxes with all of the changes that are going on. Who knows what we're going to end up with. But we'll be given some insights by Bonnie Lee that'll be just great. And if you're in business or if you're a person that's wanting to promote yourself, would you like to think like a marketer? Well, Lauren Saunier is going to be able to give us that information. So we have a dynamic week, even though it's a Thanksgiving holiday weekend that will be coming up next week. But we've got things about business, how to better your life, all of this and more is going to be heard right here on the Donna Sebo Show. So I hope you can join me. Now, let's go for that recipe, chicken breast stuffed with sun-dried tomatoes and green olives. Good stuff. Now, this is going to serve four people quite nicely. Now, some of the ingredients may not be common to your kitchen, but they are well worth acquiring. And the first ingredient that you're going to be aware of is saffron. You need about 15 threads of saffron. And it is one of your more expensive spices, but a tiny bit goes a long way. You're also going to need 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil, 1/4 cup of the olive oil, 2.5 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice, and fresh is best, but if you don't have fresh available, then you can use the liquid lemon juice that you can get at the grocery store. You need 1.5 teaspoons of mild honey. Clover honey can be very, very good, but I need 1.5 teaspoons of mild honey. You need 1/2 teaspoon of freshly grated lemon zest, 1/2 teaspoon of the lemon zest, 1/4 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes, 1/4 teaspoon of that, 1 large clove of garlic. You want to crush that and then peel it and chop it real, real fine. 1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt, 1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt, 1/4 cup drained, oil-packed, sun-dried tomatoes. And that's 1/4 cup. You want to drain them, and you want to then coarsely chop the tomatoes. Then you need 1/4 cup of pitted green olives, like manzanilla olives. And what you want to do is just put those to the side, and then 1/4 cup of loosely packed fresh flat leaf parsley, and you want to chop those up coarsely. Then you want 4 skin-on, bone-in chicken breasts. Yep, you want them the way they should be. the bone in and the skin on. And it'll, for four of those, that's about 3 to 3.5 pounds of meat. And then you're going to need about a teaspoon of freshly ground pepper. Now, this is how simple the recipe is. You're going to need to heat your oven, put a rack in the middle of the oven, heat the oven to 425 degrees. Now, your saffron threads, remember there's about 15 of them, you need to soak them in 2 teaspoons of hot water for about 5 minutes. Then, in your food processor, or you could use a blender if you don't have a food processor, you want to puree the saffron and the soaking water with your olive oil, your lemon juice, the honey, the lemon zest, the red pepper flakes, the garlic, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. You want to put all those ingredients together. Then you add the sun-dried tomatoes, the olives, and the parsley, and you just pulse. If you've got a blender, you just put it on for a split second and take a spatula inside the blender. But if you have your food processor, it is going to be better if you have a food processor. It seems like it's easier to control. But remember, you just pulse it, and you want a coarsely chopped stuffing. It should be coarser than what a pesto would be. So if any of the backbone is still attached to your chicken breast, you want to cut it off with poultry shears and trim off the side flap with the rib meat and the bones. You want to use your finger to make a small opening between the skin and the flesh of the breast. You run your finger underneath the skin to separate it from the breast. There's that very thin membrane, so you want to gently separate it. And that's easily done. You want to make a pocket, but you don't want to detach the edges of the skin around the breast. You just want to go in. You want to form that little pocket with your fingers. And then you take your stuffing mixture and stuff it into that pocket, and you put it evenly over the chicken breast. Pat the skin back into place, and you want to then season it with 1 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of pepper. Season all the chicken breasts. Line a heavy-duty rimmed baking sheet with aluminum foil, and you want to roast your chicken on the baking sheet until the juices are running clear and a meat thermometer registers about 165 degrees. That's going to take about 30 minutes. You'll be able to eyeball it, too. You'll see it. And you're going to have a delicious, deliciously seasoned chicken breast. And if you're fixing it and you want to say, gee, there's only two of us, great, then you can have it cold, and you could serve it on a salad if you wanted. But this has flavor, and it will permeate the meat. The upper skin will become nice and crusty. You'll have a deliciously flavorful chicken breast for a meal. And again, you can have asparagus. You can choose whatever kind of vegetables you want on the side or a salad. And it works out beautifully. But cold, it is very good as well. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we're just about out of time. I want to remind you, I'll have to share the story with you about how Good Samaritans were able to make a young man who didn't think he could ever live on his own actually achieve the dream. So I'll probably share that with you tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It is so important for us to be aware of history. When I was talking with Bob Coran earlier, it was important for me when we were doing this interview about the werewolves to let you know that this man is a historian, and he did a lot of research on this. And what it does, it brings forth how, because of fear, superstition, and ignorance, we often do things that are hideous in the history of humanity. We're doing things today that are hideous and will be written up in the future by historians thinking that we're nothing but barbarians that existed. Well, it just seems, as Robert says, that, or Bob says, that this is something that's inherent in all of us. Remember, you have the right to be informed, and reading is one of the best ways that you can do it. Don't hesitate to explore subjects that maybe would be sort of uncomfortable for you. Find out why it's uncomfortable. Look at what your facts are. Look at different people's attitudes and positions on them. Be a free thinker. That is what enables you as an individual to make your choices. This is Donna Sebo. Enjoy your day. Enjoy your freedom of your own personality and your life. and be the best contributor of your talents that you possibly can. The world needs you. Go for the highest and the best. See you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. This is Donna Seaball. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Seaball Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Seaball Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.